I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, Midday goes back to the garden. As we approach Memorial Day weekend, the unofficial start of summer, it's time to get serious about yanking those weeds, prepping that soil, and getting our flowers and veggies planted. What should we be planting at this juncture? How can we safely repel pests? And how can we organize our community gardens in cities and suburbs so that everybody has access to fresh, wholesome food? Carrie Engel is the greenhouse manager at Valley View Farms in Cockeysville. Denzel Mitchell is the manager of the Strength to Love 2 Farm in Sandtown, Winchester. They've got tips and answers to all of your gardening questions. Plus, the Everyman Theater's final production of the season is a play about the family of a longtime Baltimore journalist. Theater critic J. Wynn Russick has a review of The Book of Joseph. Midday starts right after the news. We are stars. And welcome to Midday. We are indeed going back to the garden. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. It's been a pretty unusual spring, with the eastern United States recording one of the coldest Marches in nearly two decades, and an April that was also colder and wetter than normal. But here we are in May. It's Memorial Day weekend right on the horizon. If you're staying in town, sunshine is predicted, at least for Saturday, and lots of us are raring to go in our gardens. Joining us with some tips on how to make those gardens grow, Carrie Engel, the greenhouse manager and a plant specialist. She's been at Valley View Farms in Cockeysville, I'm told, for most of nearly five decades. Is that possible, Carrie?
Yeah. I started there in 72. Oh. I did leave for a short time, but I went back.
All right. But clearly, in 1972, you were 8 years old. And
exactly.
Then they hired you,
that's right.
Very good. Well, we are delighted to have you back. Thanks for coming in. And Denzel Mitchell is here as well. He's the former owner of Five Seeds Farm. And last month, he signed on as the farm manager at Strength to Love 2 Farm. That's a 1.5-acre workforce training farm in Sandtown, Winchester. They work with returning ex-offenders, and they serve as a Baltimore food resource with produce outlets around the city. The farm is run by the nonprofit group called Intersection for Change. It's also a member of the Farm Alliance of Baltimore, a network of producers that's working to increase the viability of urban farming and to improve access to city-grown foods. Denzel Mitchell, welcome to the show. It's good to see you.
Thank you.
So we invite everybody who has questions about gardens, some tips of your own, if you'd like to share them with us, 410-662-8780. That's our number here at Midday, our email, midday@wipr.org, to send us a tweet at @MiddayWIPR. And you can also catch us. We are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. So, Carrie, let me start with you with the question that I have every year.
Okay.
The answer is the same every year, and I'm like resistant to the answer. So I have a bunch of bulbs in my garden.
Right.
So beautiful tulips and daffodils and crocuses, and they were gone a long time ago. But the green stems remain. And every year about this time, I have this incredible urge to just chop them off so I can plant something else. I can plant some annuals and have a little color and nicety in the garden. But I'm told I can't do that.
You can, but I wouldn't. I mean, that's really feeding the bulb back again for next year. Mm-hmm. So now's actually the best time to feed those bulbs, though, as they are sort of dying back down. So do that. I mean, if you have to kind of fold them over or plant something in front of them. I know for years I always planted pansies around my bulbs just so they would hide the foliage as they die back.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time they're about yellowed out, the pansies are kind of finished, and I can get on with my summer annual flowers.
But I'm told even if you sometimes I rubber band them back, I like turn them over and I put rubber bands on them. I'm just trying to make things neat. I'm trying to make nature neat.
Don't do that.
Let it do its thing. Yeah,
dumb
plant
idea.
Some stuff around
because
it,
they do.
Be
they
fine.
Take the sun in through the sun comes in through the greenery and it feeds it for next year.
And it's just the nitrogen and everything as those leaves die back go back into the bulb, and that's the most important thing to make it great for next year.
All right. I ask it every year because I'm hoping at some point someone's going to say, oh, yeah, sure, fine. Just go cut them back so that you can make your garden
just
look neat.
Just plant some stuff around them next year so you don't notice.
There
plant them
go.
In the fall.
All
yep.
right. I'll do that. So, Denzel, tell us a little bit about Strength to Love 2 Farm. I mean, Intersection of Change or Intersection of Change.
Yes. Right now,
did I say Intersection for Change?
We'll skip. Yeah.
Okay.
Don't worry about it.
Intersection of Change. Great thing. Todd Marcus, Elder Harris in Sandtown, they've been doing great work. And the farm is a big part of the programs that they offer there.
Yeah, they offer a wide variety of programs, and the farm is just one of the missions. So it's a High Tunnel or Hoop House Base Farm in Sandtown, Winchester. There's 16 high tunnels on a 1.5 acre plot that Intersects and Interchange has with a lease with the city through the Homegrown Baltimore program. We primarily grow leafy greens, lettuces, and leafy greens throughout the year. So the farm operates, on 12 months out of the year.
So it's a 12-month thing. So yeah. Because it's hoops, it doesn't matter to you whether it's July or
yeah.
January.
Well, it doesn't matter
to
me.
It matters a little bit.
A little bit. It's a little cold.
Yeah.
It's still a little cold. But the high tunnels allow for season extension, at any given time, it's 20 degrees. Warmer inside the tunnels than it is outside, so that allows us to be able to grow and harvest throughout the winter.
And you're distributing what you're growing to a bunch of places around town, right?
So we right now our primary market is directly at the Waverly Farmers Market. Sometimes we'll send some stuff to the Farm Alliance table at Waverly Farmers Market, and then we sell to a few restaurants in town. I actually just came on, so the farm is kind of restarting.
Yeah, you just started back a month ago, right?
Yeah, just a month ago. So, yeah. We sell to Gertrude's, Stall 11, and some other places around the city.
Yeah, how about the folks in Sandtown, Winchester? Do they have access to the food sort of directly? That's complicated to organize.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I actually would like to create a farm stand in Sandtown, Winchester, either on Fulton or Monroe or maybe on Lorman or something like that. So that's kind of down the road. But right now, we do have a partnership with the No Boundaries Coalition that has a market stand inside the Avenue Market on Pennsylvania Avenue. Mm-hmm. So on Saturdays, they've actually just started offering produce from Friends You Love Two Farms.
Because Avenue Market's close. I mean,
exactly.
Folks can get to
it. So it's right there on Pennsylvania Avenue. So we have produce there now. So I want to build up that partnership with them as well.
Yeah. So Carrie, if folks haven't planted their annuals this year, we'll talk about vegetables in a minute, but for the annuals, you got to prep the soil first, right? You don't want to just stick it in the ground from last year's dirt, right?
Yeah.
Remind us what we need to do to get the soil ready to roll.
Well, first of all, wait for it to dry out. If it has, you don't want to work wet soil because it will compact it and you'll end up with no air in the soil. We need to have that. So don't walk on it too much right now. No heavy equipment and anything. Wait for it to dry out. As it does, add any organic matter you can. So compost from your own yard. There's products like Leaf Grow out there that are from the Maryland Environmental Services that you can add. If you have a friend with, some cows, maybe mm-hmm. you can head up, make sure you use aged manure. We always say that. You don't want to use the fresh stuff because it's a little too high.
We will serve no manure before it's time.
That's right.
Is that it?
You want to let it compost a little bit. Mm-hmm. But really do all that. And the soil temperature really has just gotten up so it's comfortable for an awful lot of some of the warmer weather annuals and even warmer weather vegetables. So nobody's behind yet. I think because we had such a late start in March and then all the rain we had in May. Everybody's a little behind right now.
And even all the rain we had last week, Denzel, I mean, it's going to take a few days to dry out. I mean, we had sunshine on Sunday and Monday, and then we had rain yesterday, and then we got sun today. And, so it isn't the kind of thing that just happens overnight. Where do you have 1.5 acres? That's pretty big.
Yeah, it's a pretty good size.
Where do you get, do you compost over there as well? I mean,
composting. So we're growing everything on imported soil because the farm is on formerly residential sites. So we have barrier cloth down, and then we've built raised beds with mushroom soil and a soil mix. I'm actually going to be purchasing some new mushroom soil this year.
Because there is a concern. There is a concern about city soil, isn't
there? And there should, and there is rightfully so. So, it's very important to get your soil tested if you're gardening somewhere and you're not quite sure what the history of the site is. But it's also important to get the soil tested so you know what the organic matter content is, what the nutrient content is, so you can add the proper type and amount of nutrients.
How do folks get it tested?
How do you get it tested? So you pull a soil sample and then you send the soil sample off to a number of different labs. There's A&L Eastern, there's AgriLab. You used to be able to get it tested at the University of Maryland Cooperative Extension, but they don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So A&L Eastern is probably the easiest.
But if you just Google soil tester Maryland,
you just mail it in,
and they'll send you a chart that says this is what you got.
Exactly, they actually email it to you, and so you can read through and see what you have, and if there's some elevated lead, they'll let you know that as well. Most labs will do that, and that's kind of a concern in the city. But you know, with most city gardens, what I would suggest is building a raised bed, and just growing on top of the existing soil.
So you put like a tarp down over the original soil, as
exactly,
it were, and then start from
scratch.
Yeah.
So it's a landscape fabric, and so it's porous. So water will still go through, but the roots of the plants will not.
Mm-hmm. And Carrie, I know in the city, and certainly in my front yard, and I live downtown, I live in Reservoir Hill, there's a lot of clay in the soil. So is there a particular kind, you mentioned manure and compost, but is there a particular thing that will help sort of loosen up that clay? I mean, it actually looks red if you get deep down.
Yeah, I mean, any organic matter is going to help. So any of that's going to help. You can also use a product called gypsum. And what gypsum does is it takes those clay particles and binds them together into larger particles. And that creates more aggregate and a little bit more airspace as well. So that's another way to go. And then you can go my direction, which is to plant in pots. It's just me at my house. So I plant almost everything in pots or earth boxes, and I have great success with that.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. I mean, Denzel, you can plant a lot of stuff even indoors. I mean, folks who live in apartments, folks who live in places where you don't have access to a backyard or a front yard or something. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can plant.
Oh, right. That's how I got started. I was growing herbs on my mom's windowsill as an 11, 12-year-old kid. And I mean, you know, we have basil and some parsley and cilantro in the window now. So even though Dad is a farmer, you know, kids doing their own thing.
Nice. Denzel Mitchell is with The Strength to Love to Farm. That's over in Sandtown, Winchester. Carrie Engel is out at Valley View Farms in Cockeysville. If you've got a question about gardening, a comment, a tip you'd like to share, 410-662-8780 to send us an email, midday@wypr.org. To find us on Twitter @MiddayWYPR. If you want to find me on Twitter @TomHallWYPR, and you can check us out and leave a comment on our Facebook page @WYPR, because we are streaming live as we speak. So Carrie, is there like an it annual this year? Is there like does that change? Do folks come to Valley View all clamoring for one flower or another?
It doesn't seem like that. I mean, succulents are still hot, so that kind of runs into our non-hardy succulents, and then things like sedums and the hens and chicks and everything that are hardy. So that's still kind of big. Anything that attracts butterflies and hummingbirds right now is hot. So
what are those?
Out in the perennial garden, it's things like Asclepias, which is a butterfly weed. Almost anything in the Monarda bee balm family is going to be wonderful. Salvias are great. And these are all great pollinators to plant kind of around your vegetable garden to bring some of those, to attract some of the good guys into your garden. So that really helps out a lot. There are a lot of annuals that'll do that too. Things like Lantana, one of my favorites. There's a wonderful one called Black and Blue Salvia that gets about 2 to 3 feet tall. Gets to be a big plant.
Big.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And has a blue trumpet-shaped flower on it, and hummingbirds just love that plant.
Nice.
So there really
now,
are
can
some
you
cool
plant
stuff.
That in a pot, for example?
Oh,
or does
sure.
That require,
uh-huh. Yep. In fact, there's a variety called Amistad that gets really, really big, and we have a whole handout available at work.
Oh, yeah.
That'll,
the butterfly
you know,
garden
yep,
right there.
Butterfly garden to show you what to use. And then you were talking about herbs, Denzel. A lot of the herbs are great for attracting great host plants, including parsley and dill.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be afraid if you see caterpillars on there. They might be swallowtails or something else one day.
So that's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a good thing.
I mean, you don't want to put it in your dinner, but it's a nice thing to see.
They eat the leaves a little bit, so they're beautiful. So you got to leave them alone. Let them have their share.
So you guys over at Strength of Love to really in a way sort of specialize in lettuces and stuff. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a 12-month thing? And you also plant the stuff that you know other folks would be planting at this time of year.
A little less so. I mean, I think in the past the farm has grown like melons and tomatoes and cucumbers and squash and okra and beans and things like that. I've kind of dialed down the diversity a little bit and focused on greens. We'll do some leafy herbs, parsley, cilantro, maybe a few summer crops. Well, there's tons of summer crops out there. You know, there's 15 other urban farms that are in the Farm Alliance, and they have the space to do those big summer crops much better than we can.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about Farm Alliance. I mean, this is a whole network of farms.
Absolutely.
And you're part of it over in Sandtown.
Right. So the Farm Alliance was created back in 2010. It was a brainchild of a young lady named Maya Kosick. She got an OSI fellowship to create a network of urban farms so that the urban agricultural community in Baltimore City could support each other, and we could market jointly at a number of different markets that we were at, and and pool resources for tools and pushing for urban agriculture in Baltimore City. And so the organization has been running along. Now it's its own independent nonprofit with a fantastic executive director. We have a shared market stand at the Waverly Farmers Market, and they actually just bought a van that they can now use for deliveries and going to market. And it's been a fantastic organization for supporting and attracting urban farms in Baltimore City.
And what a great idea to share tools. That's true. You don't need like 12, tillers, right?
You don't. Yeah. You don't. Yeah. Yeah. And that was part of it. There was a tiller that was stored at Real Food Farm, and everybody needed to use it. And you're only farming on a half an acre. It doesn't make a lot of sense to make that huge investment in a piece of equipment and then not have any place to store it.
Sure. And the burgeoning of community gardens, not only in the city but throughout the counties and stuff. I mean, it's really, you've been at Valley View now for, as we said, more than
ever.
A few years.
Yeah.
And I mean, I bet you've really seen a difference, an evolution, and a transformation of people's interest in gardening, interest in growing their own food, or at the very least their own herbs, to cook with.
Oh, no, it's absolutely there. And it's funny because when I started at Valley View, I worked in the produce area. So Valley View grew all the vegetables and we sold them at the store. So we've transitioned from that into actually selling the plants. So it's been cool. And then just the people, they're more into heirloom plants, I think, now than they used to be. Mm-hmm. So they're really interested in just getting back to their roots, maybe. Having a story behind each of the plants is kind of fun.
Are there like best sellers in the produce department?
There absolutely are. Celebrity and Better Boy tomatoes remain our number one and two.
Still.
But we sell a lot of cherry tomatoes.
Celebrity. There's a thing called celebrity tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the best all around. It's a determinate variety, so it doesn't get too tall. It's sort of a bush tomato. But it still produces for a long time, about half pound fruits, and it's very disease resistant compared to a lot of the other tomatoes that are out there.
So it's a hearty choice.
Yeah, my boss Bill Ford, who has since passed away, probably had 40 of them in his garden at any time, and he did a lot of canning and shared them with all of us.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. We have Kay. She's over in Ten Hills on the west side. Kay, welcome to Midday with Denzel Mitchell and Carrie Engel.
Hi, thank you. I have wiregrass, as I'm told it is, plus I'm getting these. Grass looks great when it first gets green. Then these little pockets get brown, and then nothing grows. There's no bugs in there.
Okay.
Any suggestions?
I'd start with a soil test. We were talking about that before. Check out your pH, and we can do a free test for that. Anything for the pH, anything else you'd have to send out for. And we could at least start there. The wiregrass, there are some herbicides out there that will take care of it, some organic and natural and others that aren't. So double check the labels and all that. Ask our guys or whoever you go to. Just make sure there are pros in it, but read the label on any of this stuff to make sure you're using it the right time of day, right time of year to really get
right
rid of
amount.
The problem. Yeah.
Yeah. And other suggestion, you can just rip your lawn up and turn it into a garden.
There you go.
There you go. That's always an option.
That's always an option.
Option A, forget the lawn and
right.
just have a garden.
Have
you
a garden.
There's more than one house in our neighborhood who's doing that.
That's true. I remember.
And it's okay. I mean, I think it's just great. Yeah. Well, Kay, good luck. I mean, it is frustrating when you have otherwise beautiful lawn and then you got these brown spots. So, yeah.
And check out for, lift up the soil and see if you have any little critters under there that might be chewing on it, any grubs.
Yeah.
Some Japanese beetle grubs will be emerging here pretty soon.
All right. Well, thanks for that call. We got to take a break. We will come back and we'll have more with Carrie Engel. She is the veteran greenhouse manager at Valley View Farms up in Cockeysville. She oversees the annuals, the tropicals, and the vegetables. Denzel Mitchell is here as well. He's a pioneering urban farmer who manages the Strength to Love 2 Farm. That's a returning citizen training center and community food resource over in Sandtown, Winchester. After a quick break, we'll come back and take your calls, questions, comments, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet @MiddayWYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. We are stars. We are golden. We are good. We are hearted. And we got to get ourselves back to the garden.
And we indeed are going back to the garden here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on tomorrow's show, our series of conversations with the candidates continues with the first of three Democrats running in the primary for Baltimore State's attorney. Ivan Bates joins me tomorrow. Thiru Vignaraja stops by next week. And on June 11th, I'll spend the hour with incumbent state's attorney Marilyn Mosby. And coming up a little later today, theater critic J. Wynn Russick has a review of The Book of Joseph at the Everyman Theater here in Baltimore. But now we do indeed go back to the garden with Denzel Mitchell of the Strength to Love 2 Farm, a workforce training farm for ex-offenders over in Sandtown, Winchester, and Carrie Engel. She manages the greenhouse at Valley View Farms in Cockeysville. If you have a question about your garden, a tip you'd like to share, we'd love to hear it. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, to send us a tweet at @midday_WIPR. And we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. So, Denzel, let me have you define a term for me. I've heard of hoop houses and high tunnel structures. Are they're the same thing, right?
So, yeah. So hoop houses and high tunnels are synonymous terms. So they're very inexpensive, low-tech greenhouses. They're essentially metal structures that are stretched with greenhouse plastic. And they have in walls, and they allow you to grow well past the frost.
There's a lot of community gardens going up, and there's a plethora of them now that didn't exist years
right.
ago. I mean, folks are taking vacant lots, houses
right.
that have been torn down, and then they're putting them to good use. Are hoop houses a good idea for community organizations that want to have farms? I mean, are you aware that they're doing hoops as well as, so-called
right.
regular farms?
Yeah. So, I definitely recommend using hoop houses. I mean, the heat island effect that we have in the city allows people to garden much later into the season.
So what's the heat island effect?
Heat island effect. So in cities, you have lots of concrete, you have lots of asphalt, you got tall buildings. All all that infrastructure holds heat. So even when the sun has gone down, the city is much warmer than it is in the county where, there's lots of open space. There's a lot less buildings. There's more meadow, and so you can use that to your advantage as a gardener to kind of push the garden, to push your garden and push your plants later into the season. But speaking about community gardens, I think it's a great idea for a group of people to get together, and if they want to manage a space like that, it's a great idea to have a hoop house that folks have access to and can grow in, because it allows you to grow much later into the season.
Yeah, because like in our neighborhood, for example, we have the Whitelock Community Farm, which is terrific. I mean, and so that's a farm that lots of people work on together, volunteers and some professional staff. And then there's also plots that people have that they organize themselves. I know there's one of those in Druid Hill Park where there's places you can go up and have your own little plot if you don't have it right in your house.
We're in Park Heights as well.
So they're all over, and that's really a good thing. So Carrie, one of the big problems a lot of folks have is pests and weeds and bugs and critters and stuff. Any general tips about how to address those?
Our biggest pest seems to be the four-legged lovely deer. Bambi visits our gardens often. So I always use a product. It's a little deer tape that goes around the edge of my garden, and it's embedded with like an mint oil sort of thing. The deer tape works well in my garden. They got my hostas, though, the other day when I wasn't looking, so I did go out and spray those the other day to keep them away.
But you can spray them with stuff that will repel the deer.
That's right.
Rather than,
you don't want to hurt the deer.
Fencing.
Yeah, they're pretty.
Yeah.
Some other pests can get to you. Now, insects and everything, I think the best thing to do is to just grow the things correctly. Have the right plant in the right space. Make sure you're rotating crops on a regular basis. And that's going to lessen... you don't want to be using a lot of pesticides and everything in the garden, because we want birds and butterflies and the wildlife around a little bit. So just be a little careful there. I think one of the things people tend to do is plant things a little too closely, and I think they might water too frequently sometimes. So I'd watch those two things first, and I think you'll lessen a lot of the dependency you might have on some of these pesticides and everything.
We have what's described as a bashful caller who doesn't want to actually come on the radio and ask the question, but the question that he or she has is, when is the best time to start planting cucumbers? Mm. What do you think, Denzel?
Any day now.
Any day now.
I've had mine in for about a week and 2 weeks. I hope that's a good time.
Yeah. I mean, we just, you know, again, you know, like Carrie said, everybody's a little bit behind because of the spring temperatures and all the rain. We actually just planted cucumbers last week, so you're right on time.
They're good to go.
Yeah. And I mean, now's probably a good time. They've probably got starters at Valley View,
right?
Oh,
yeah, sure. Yeah, we have 6-7 varieties ready to go. So if you want little pickling cucumbers, if you're doing them in a pot, there's some varieties specific for containers. Mm-hmm. So you really can do all kinds of things.
Yeah, I've had mine in pots for years, and they work great.
Oh,
and
by
the end of the summer, it's like the thing that ate New York City.
right.
The leaves are all right. Growing up, it's 7 feet tall, and it's really crazy. So, Carrie, I have a neighbor, Eric Hunter, who's a great guy, and he has these beautiful azaleas that are still blooming. I mean, I was walking the dog yesterday, and they're blooming. And I have a couple of azaleas in the front of my house that are not blooming anymore. Now, is this because Eric is a much nicer person than I am? Because I assume that's the reason. I mean, why does some stay vibrant and flowery and the others just decide, nope, I'm taking a nap until next year?
It can be a couple of different things. One, it can be the variety of the azaleas. It can also be maybe he has a little more afternoon shade than you do, because they really do like morning sun, but they don't really like hot afternoon sun. It could be mulching, you know, you want to, with azaleas, they're fairly shallow rooted, so they don't want a lot of mulch on them. So, you know, any number of things. But I would just go out and talk nicely to your plants and see if that just doesn't help them out a little bit.
You do have to talk to them. That's very important.
I do poetry. I recite Langston Hughes. Okay. You know, I sing them lullabies at night. I'm doing all the things that it says on the internet. I read it on the internet.
There
it has to be true.
You
know? Right. Speaking of the internet, Tatiana sends us an email and says, I just bought a house with a large garden of plants that I don't know. Is there a way to take a photo of a plant and determine what it is? Liz in Glen Rock, Pennsylvania says, hi, I've got a garden that's being taken over by chickweed. Oof. I never use any chemicals on my vegetables or lawn. Any suggestions? So first thing, to identify a plant by a photo. I mean, is that...
There's an app that'll identify songs.
You know,
yeah. Google used to do that. I guess you can't do it anymore, but you used to be able to take a picture and Google it. But yeah, there are apps that can do it now. Or you can do the old-fashioned way and go get a pile of books from the library.
Yeah.
Flip through them and familiarize yourself, and then you say, oh, okay, that's a...
If it's close, it'll be an adjacent page.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Or bring them into your favorite... Take some pictures or some samples, bring them into your favorite garden center, and you're happy to help.
Oh, that's true.
And they'll say, I can identify that plant in 2 seconds.
Maybe. Sometimes it takes a team of us, but we'll usually get it down eventually.
Right. The committee has to consult.
Yes, absolutely.
So how about chickweed? What is chickweed? That sounds like a demon plant.
It's a pain in the neck. Early bloomer. So it's going to come out early in the year, and after that, it's kind of gone. So if you can get out there and just pull it out, you're really going to be fine. But it's an early thing. If you can put down a weed preventer next fall or even very early in the spring, there are some things like corn gluten that are naturals that will keep new seeds from germinating. So that can help you out. There are also some synthetic ways to do it too. But I just go out there right now and pull it. It's nice and wet. It's a great day for weeding.
Yeah, it'll just come right up.
Yeah. Let's go to Sue in Baltimore. Sue, welcome to Midday.
Hi, thank you. Thanks, Tom. And I appreciate Denzel and Carrie, and they're very positive and encouraging and common sense conversation. Regarding the chickweed, if you've got a good, healthy environment there, and if you have a lot of chickweed, take it in the kitchen, wash it, make smoothies. It's wonderful.
See, I was going to say that, but I'll let
really you can drink this stuff.
It's edible. Yeah.
Wow. Yes, it is edible.
As are dandelion greens. So there's all kinds of good stuff.
That's true.
All right.
My question. Don't
say that for the show.
Okay. My question is regarding soil that one inherits from a previous gardener. And there's two parts to the question. One is, how does soil become depleted of potassium and phosphorus if it comes up short on the soil test? And the second part of that is, what comes to your mind when thinking of balancing that out and putting some nutrients, the potassium and phosphorus nutrients, back into that soil when you don't have a lot of money and you're not going to go out and spend money on chemical fertilizer.
Gotcha. So to answer your first question, you know, that's pretty easy. You know, as you grow vegetables in the soil, they're going to deplete, you know, the plants are going to uptake the nutrients from the soil and they're going to deplete the soil. And so the soil has to be replenished. The easiest way to replenish some of those nutrients back into the soil is to just add compost. You know, you've got a nice compost pile in your yard. It's going to have a full spectrum of soil nutrients that you can easily replenish by sprinkling some compost. Outside of that, you know, I can tell you what my grandmother used to tell me, but I'm sure Carrie probably has a little bit more.
I'm ready to hear from Grandma.
Grandma used to, you know, put fish heads and
wood ash
and broken up eggshells, and you know, all those things will eventually break down in the soil, and they'll put some of those nutrients back. So you know, a lot of that stuff is right there in our kitchen. I mean, essentially, it's composting. You know, but you can just dig a little trough directly into the soil. You know, fish is a little tough because that in the city will attract the other four-legged vermin.
Right.
You know, so you gotta kind of.
And eggshells are interesting because I compost in my house in containers.
Right.
You know,
right.
You can't because in the city, as you say, I mean, right. There is a rat problem. It's right. Much better than it used to be, certainly,
right.
Because folks are better about putting stuff in the trash cans, and mm-hmm. I think those big green trash cans that the city hands out have been a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But the eggshells never deteriorate in mine. I mean, they're still going strong. It's eggshells 4 years later. I mean, so I stopped doing eggshells.
Yeah, that's calcium. So I'm kind of surprised that there's phosphorus usually gets locked up in the soil. So mm-hmm. it's usually a matter of letting it loose again. Check your pH in the soil because that's going to allow a lot of those nutrients out and to be available. But be careful with phosphorus because we can have some issues with water if we have mm-hmm. too much phosphorus in our yards and we allow that to get down into the base system or whatever. So be very careful with that. But check your pH. If your pH is where it should be for your plant and for tomatoes, say, or grass, you're probably around 6.5 to 7 mm-hmm. is where you want your pH to be. If you have more acidic soil, you were talking azaleas are great for that. Mm-hmm. Just check that out and make sure that the nutrients are available that are locked up in your soil by having a good pH. And I never understood that until I had a fish tank.
So the pH acidic balance is going to be different depending on what you want to grow.
Exactly.
Oh,
so
yeah,
there's
absolutely.
No like standard thing that, you know, this is what you want for.
I'd say 90% of what we want to grow in vegetable gardens, you're probably at a pretty neutral pH.
Mm-hmm.
But then as you get into blueberries or a few other things,
so,
that
you
want
to
slightly
lower. More acidic.
So right. When you get that report from the, you know, whatever service you get it from, mm-hmm. you're looking for a pH number of what? For vegetables and annuals?
You'd like to be around 6 to 7, 6.5 to 7 for most of them.
Okay.
And our soil runs slightly acidic in Maryland, so you might have to adjust it with some lime or something.
Mm-hmm. We have a call from Charlotte who's not on the line, but she says, Denzel, this is a question for you. She's interested in how long the hoop house plastic lasts and what kind of maintenance issues do you have to deal with? That could be pretty complicated, I would imagine, because you've got that's a lot of plastic.
It is. It is a lot of plastic, depending on how big your high tunnel is. I mean, ours are about 160 feet long, 30 by 160 feet. So the plastic lasts about 3 to 5 years. It just, you know, degrades, you know, in over the years and, you know, being stretched out in the sunlight degrades it. And in terms of the maintenance, you have to take the plastic off and replace it with new plastic every year. You know, probably one the bigger maintenance issue is just poking a hole in it, you know, which tends to happen sometimes. You know, you're just not as careful if there's some kids around or something like that. You know, what kid doesn't want to put a hole in a big sheet of plastic?
Exactly.
In front
it's like
of them,
the best
know?
Balloon ever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Let's go to Phyllis. You're in Falston, I guess. Phyllis, welcome to Midday. Thanks for the call.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to make a comment that I've gardened all my life. I'm older now. I cannot tug a rototiller anymore.
Mm.
But I've discovered the joys of container gardening on the patio. I use old wash tubs. I use anything. Punch holes in the bottom for
mm-hmm.
drainage.
Mm-hmm.
And you can buy seeds that are specifically for containers. I grow cucumbers, beans, small eggplant, chard, everything. And it makes a very healthy diet. You don't need chemicals. And that was all I wanted to say. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. You know, my mom told me when I was in graduate school, and I was living in Boston, and I had this terrible sort of basement apartment with linoleum floors and a lot of roaches, and it was just one of those places. But that's what you can afford when you're doing that. And she came to my apartment and was horrified, you know, that she said, and she said, the thing that you really need is something growing in here. So she went out and she bought me like an aloe plant.
There you
and
go.
And a couple of things, you know, just a succulent, you know. And ever since then, I've understood that wherever I was living, for whatever reason, you should have something growing in your house. Mm-hmm. You know, there should be something, whether it's a little pot of something. And of course, I've been lucky. I have geraniums that I grow in hanging pots. And I bring them in the winter and keep them going. I just stick them in a windowsill and then I bring them back out of the sun. I've had some geraniums for 25 years. I mean, they do wow. last a long time, so it's fun. But you should always have something growing. We have stuff growing in the studio. Which of you
great.
Bought all this stuff? did you bring this, Denzel?
It wasn't me.
We stole it.
Okay, so our staff stole all of the plants from everybody's office and they put it right here. So right. we have this great
made
set.
Made us feel going. Right at home.
It is fantastic. Yeah. I thought you guys were lugging it over from the farm.
and they clean air, so this is a wonderful thing, right?
Yeah,
take
they
a
do.
Lot of the toxins out of the air
so
inside.
So we get all the hot air that I produce here in the studio. That's good. So Matt is in Catonsville, and he writes an email, I have creeping Charlie getting into everything in my yard. My wife won't let me use hardcore chemicals on the yard. Glyphosate.
That's Roundup.
It's a non-starter. So I pull it every year, and I rake it, but it keeps coming back. So what can I do to eliminate creeping Charlie?
There's some newer chemicals. There's a product called iron phosphate, but we market it under the name Pulverize. It's a natural product, but it does target those sorts of things. So it's natural to use. It's not going to bother the soil or stay in the soil. Mm-hmm. And it's something that, you know, it's just another tool for you. So I've tried it a little bit in my garden. I haven't gone whole hog with it yet, but so far it's working great.
Mm-hmm. And one thing about Strength to Love to Farm that I want to farm too, that I want to ask you about is that you are working with a lot of folks who have been recently incarcerated, mm-hmm. right? And so this is training them for jobs in other farms and stuff. This is giving them some focus. Talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So it's a workforce training program, but more specifically, it's an entrepreneurship training program. And so the initial idea was that they would come to the farm, learn how to farm, come to the farm and learn the business of agriculture, and then they could go out and work in some sector of the food community here in Baltimore. So whether it's post-harvest handling, growing and producing, distribution, or even working in kitchens. So that was the original idea.
Yeah, because there's a lot of different aspects to it. It's not just like, you know, being a farmer and, you know, planting the stuff and watering it.
No. I mean, you could do marketing and sales. I mean, you could do, recipe development, education, you know, so there's lots of opportunities with food. I mean, we all have to eat and we all got to eat every day.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to forget that it's a huge, huge business, huge industry.
Yeah.
But there's lots of opportunities.
And how many folks you have involved at the moment?
Right now I have 4 employees.
Yeah. Good for you. Mm-hmm. And so, Carrie, right now, here we are, Memorial Day weekend. What should folks be planting if they haven't planted it yet?
I'd certainly go tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, cucumbers, zucchini, any of that kind of stuff. Some of your herbs you can start putting out now, like basil. Some of the things that are a little tender, I guess. And annuals, go all out, but you can still put in trees and shrubs and still put in your perennials now. It's just it's our favorite month because this is when everybody gets going and gets their stuff out in the garden.
This is it. I've been out to Valley View sometimes in May where you have to have a police officer directing traffic.
it's very like, helpful.
It's wild. Yeah. It's wow. just wild. Just wow. All right. Well, thank you both for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Look forward to the next time because there's plenty of stuff to talk about when it comes to stuff that's growing. So appreciate it. All right. Many thanks. Carrie Engel is the greenhouse manager at Valley View Farms up in Cockeysville. Denzel Mitchell is the farm manager at Strength to Love 2 Farm in Sandtown, Winchester, over on the west side. It's one of many programs run by Intersection of Change. So we send our best wishes to Elder C.W. Harris and to Todd Marcus and all the folks who are doing great work, including you, over at Intersection. So appreciate it. Coming up after a break, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will join us. She's got her weekly theater review. She's been down to the Everyman Theater. We'll see what she has to say. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
We are stars. We are golden. We are.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.